Thousands of homes have been evacuated in Midland today. Several dams failed last night and this morning after torrential downpours swept the state. The water's rising and is expected to crest in downtown Midland this evening. What led to the dam failures, and could the flooding have been prevented? Governor Whitmer brought this up during a visit to the flooded areas earlier today.
Regarding the dams, the state of Michigan is reviewing every potential legal recourse that we have, because this incredible damage requires that we hold people responsible.
We're joined now by an expert in watershed hydrology who's been following the story as it unfolds in Midland. Ann Jefferson is an associate professor of geology at Kent State University. Ann, welcome to Stateside.
Thanks for having me.
So many of us take dams for granted as infrastructure in our communities, even though we know very little about them. Can you give us a brief overview of the practical function of dams?
Sure. A lot of the time we think of the dam as that concrete structure with water pouring through some gates or over the top. But there's actually a lot more elements to the dam, and those are what come into play when we start to get into situations like we are seeing in Michigan right now. So those concrete gates are where the water is designed to flow through and over during normal operations. But the real heart of the dam is often a very long earthen wall, really the wall that's holding the water in the reservoir back. And then the third critical element is a spillway, an emergency spillway that's designed to protect that earthen wall of the dam in the event that not all of the water can pass through the gates. And so these emergency spillways, 99.9% of the time, aren't doing anything. But in an emergency, they play a critical role in keeping the dam intact.
Right. Dam failures are not entirely uncommon, but this scale just seems so much different, right?
Yeah, dam failures are unfortunately reasonably common, and they are often in older dams and in smaller dams, the ones that maybe have received less attention over the years, maybe less maintenance, or sometimes less federal oversight. So states manage a lot of dam safety, although when hydroelectricity is being generated, then there's federal oversight as well. And so dam failures could happen because of a lack of oversight or a lack of maintenance or simply something the dam was never designed to handle.
Why is it? What are some of the reasons why infrastructure tends to get put on the back burner for updates?
Well, you know, that's a good question, but maybe
money issues, right?
Yeah. So money, and we have in the U.S. a mixture of dams that are operated by government agencies and those that are owned and operated by private owners. And so for private owners, that money motivation is a really critical one. If you can keep making money while putting off repairs and keeping your license to operate your dam, then that's to your advantage. But, you know, in the long term, that doesn't necessarily pay off.
One of the dams at the center of the story in Midland is the Edenville Dam. It's privately owned. And we've been reading today that the owners are reportedly negligent and have numerous citations from the federal government. I mean, how does this happen? Is it fairly common for such a critical piece of infrastructure to be running afoul of federal regulations more than once?
You know, that was actually one of the really surprising aspects of the story when I started reading up on it last night. So the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which licenses hydropower dams, wields a lot of power, because if they don't grant you the license, you can't sell hydropower from the dam. And so typically, dam operators do everything they can to maintain that license. But in this case, the operator of Edenville Dam gave up the license rather than making the safety repairs that were being requested of them.
It kind of sounds like just leaving a property vacant and, you know, not mowing the lawn, not making repairs over the years. Is that a good analogy?
Yeah, that might be a pretty reasonable analogy. And in this case, FERC, the federal commission, also said, you know, if we don't grant you this license, you're not paying any attention to us. If we don't grant you this license, then the state has more capacity to regulate you because you're no longer a federally licensed facility. And so there is also this handoff in responsibilities and handoff in what might come in terms of effect for the dam operator.
So there was an assumption that the state regulation might actually result in more attention, but that was not indeed the case.
Well, it's not clear, but basically what FERC was saying is that, you know, we can't get you to do anything. So the thing that we can do is remove your license, and that makes you a state problem rather than a federal problem. The other thing I've been reading about is that there was this county, multi-county task force that was in the process of trying to acquire these dams. And it sounds like, unfortunately, that hadn't happened yet. They hadn't been able to buy the dams and make the repairs that they knew were needed. And so this really points to some of the broader safety issues associated with private dams, again, where there's a different sort of cost-benefit ratio for the private dam owners versus public entities that have to think much more broadly and holistically about the costs and benefits of maintaining the dams.
And Michigan has been experiencing increased rainfall over the past couple of decades, and climate projections show that the state is a pretty wet part of the country. You don't have to tell any farmers in the region that, but this is one of the more prominent ways it's affected public infrastructure. Do you think we should expect to see more of these events simply due to increased volume of rainwater in major events like this?
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. Our infrastructure was designed for a past climate, and we know that climate has changed and climate is continuing to change. And that means these more intense rainfalls and wetter conditions overall are things that our infrastructure wasn't designed for. The dams that we're talking about today were designed over 100 years ago. And some of the issues with their renewal of their permits were associated with the fact that they didn't meet current requirements for how much water they could pass over their spillways. And so when you are designing and licensing a dam, you compute a scenario called a probable maximum flood. And the dam is supposed to be designed to be able to pass that probable maximum flood without failure. And at Edenville Dam, what FERC said, the federal commission, was that it was not going to be able to pass that probable maximum flood. Now, I don't know whether the events we've had this week in Michigan were anywhere near the probable maximum flood, but that probable maximum flood is a really important, very high bar that dams need to reach in order to cope with intense precipitation and big floods like we have been seeing more and more often in a changing climate.
And I know you're a geologist and not a policy person, but there have been discussions about how infrastructure in Michigan and across the United States has been neglected over the years. Do you have any thoughts on the debates that we've seen over fixing dams and where the funding for that might come from, considering that there is this predictable pattern of trying to get dam ownership to act and then the buck gets passed in other places?
Yeah, that's really tough. I mean, ultimately, the public is going to pay the cost in terms of lost lives and property damage when dams fail. And so dam safety and levee safety along rivers, these are absolutely critical public safety things. And we just have to find a way to get the maintenance and upgrades that are needed paid for.
Can you tell us anything else about what's happening elsewhere in the watersheds that you study? Again, you're coming to us from Kent State.
Sure. So I actually work a lot on the effects of cities and urban areas on flooding and river flow. And so that's actually really kind of connected to some of these issues around climate change and around dams, because what we are seeing over and over again in my research and in this case in Michigan is that intense precipitation running quickly off the land is really stressing our structures, whether those are big reservoirs like we're talking about in this story or whether those are smaller things like stormwater ponds and rain gardens. We need ways to be able to soak up the water, slow it down, hold it back so that we don't experience the catastrophic flooding that we're seeing like today.
We might think for a minute about just the timeline under which the infrastructures that we rely on were built. I mean, how long has it been since the United States went on a serious, dam building binge?
Yeah, so that's a great point. So the dams in this river basin were about 100 years old, and we know that there are actually millions of dams in the United States, ranging from just maybe 40 years old to several hundred years old. Many of them are so small they don't even appear on inventories, but at the same time, they can cause problems if they fail. A lot of dams are past their original design lifetime, and many more are quickly approaching that. So we're talking about asking infrastructure to perform safely for longer than it was originally intended to do so. And, you know, we do have a pretty good dam safety program in most states and in the federal government, but that's driven by this really long history of dam failures. Starting in the 1800s, you know, the Johnstown flood in 1889 was a national tragedy. And there was a whole series of dam failures all the way up through the 1930s, but it actually was a series of dam failures in the 1970s that finally caused the United States to take dam safety very seriously nationwide. And so you combine this sort of relatively recent focus on dam safety with the fact that there are many, many, many aging dams, and you have this sort of sense that this is something we're going to be paying more and more attention to in the coming years.
Ann Jefferson is an associate professor of geology at Kent State University. Ann, thanks for your time today.
No problem.